Committee of the Joint Committee of Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, July 22nd, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 437A relating to higher education. Mr. Bender, can you take us through the amendments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members. You had a public hearing on this bill on July 2nd. This is the bill that came to you and involved the operations of the Oregon University system primarily, and exemptions for the system from certain state regulations. There were, at that time, a set of amendments that were presented to you at the request of the requesters of the bill. Those were the Senate Bill 437-A17 amendments. And at the time that you took testimony, basically it was focused on those Dash 17 amendments. After that public hearing, the chair asked that a set of amendments be drafted for consideration, which are before you today as the Dash A20 amendments. And these amendments are quite similar to the Dash A17s that you heard about during the public testimony, with primarily three major types of changes from what you had before. First of all, you may recall that the proposal as it came to you would have established a separate account to receive tuition monies and would have dedicated the interest earnings on that account, or would have allowed higher ed to retain those interest earnings, which are currently going to the general fund. The Dash A20 amendments remove that provision, so existing law would continue, in which the tuition monies, any interest that were earned on those funds, would continue to accrue to the general fund. Another item that was added that was not discussed during your public hearing relates to granting the Office of Degree Authorization additional authority to collect fees, and also a requirement for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to conduct a study. Because this bill has many components to it, rather than simply talking about the changes from the Dash 17s, what I have done is I prepared for you a two-page sheet that goes through the A20 amendments and explains what is in the bill if you adopt these A20 amendments, which essentially replace all of the language that are in the bill as it comes to you and grows. As you can see, there are 17 different provisions as I've numbered them here. You could number them differently, I believe. And I'd be happy to go through these if you have any questions, or I don't know how you'd like me to do this.
Could you just take us very briefly through the list? And if members of the committee have questions about any aspects, please feel free to raise them.
Okay. The first thing that the bill would do with these amendments is found in Section 1, and it establishes timelines for Office of Degree Authorization reviews of new academic programs. The ODA already has statutory responsibility to review these new academic programs. This would establish timelines for those reviews to be completed, and also it revises some criteria for the approval of new publicly funded programs, in the sense that it would make it easier for the Office of Degree Authorization to approve new publicly funded programs. This was at the request primarily of the Oregon University system, and this was one particular item that the Senate Education Committee worked on considerably. The A20 amendments do not change anything that the Senate Education Committee resolved on that particular issue. So,
questions, comments? Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Item 2 is new. This would expand the authority for the Office of Degree Authorization to collect fees for information requests and for degree validations. These are functions that the Office of Degree Authorization undergoes through statute. Well, information requests are, that's not a function, but the Office of Degree Authorization's functions in statute include the degree validation issues. The office is not authorized to collect fees for this activity currently. What this these amendments do in sections 2 through 5 is that they allow the Office of Degree Authorizations to collect additional fees for persons who come to the office requesting services. These fees, the bill also establishes a separate account, for the collection and distribution of these fee monies. The Office of Degree Authorization is housed within the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and you may recall that when the subcommittee was reviewing that agency's budget, there was interest in allowing the Office of Degree Authorization to charge additional fees beyond what it is able to do now. And you cannot do that because of the relating clause in the OSAC budget bill. Senate Bill 437 has an appropriate relating clause for adding those authorities.
Questions or comments? Objections? No? Let's go ahead, Mr. Bender.
Section 6 would allow the OUS board to control, sell, and manage property as long as it's not encumbered by a certificate of participation. As you know, certificates of participation are debt instruments that basically use property as collateral for the certificate of participation. But as property that is not so encumbered could be sold, controlled, and managed without being subject to state laws that otherwise govern the disposition of property. These amendments would allow the board to acquire, manage, and sell services and information technology, and it allows the board to delegate the property management duties to individual institutions if the board so chooses.
Questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
I apologize if I could back up to item 5. As I read the letter from Mr. Kearns, it includes, the exemption includes fuels, gasoline and diesel, other consumable commodities. Explain why that would be exempt from requiring a bid.
Are you reading section 5 on page 4?
No, I'm reading section 5 in his summary.
Oh, okay. Aren't we discussing section 3?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, we were on item number 3. Which is in section 6 of the bill. That's probably
okay.
Confusion.
I'll delay my question until you get to number 5.
Okay. So. Further questions? Mr. Bender.
Section 7 of the bill clarifies the authority of the State Board of Higher Ed to establish competitive procedures for information technology purchases. So that is what that particular section would allow.
Questions on this section?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
The language in the amendment, I'm looking at page 7, lines 3 and 4, states that the board may also establish exemptions from the competitive procedures when appropriate. I'd like to hear more about what that means and if an example could be provided that would define when it might be appropriate, that would be helpful.
Could we have the chancellor come forward and talk to us about that? And we also have this letter that was given to us this morning.
I've read the letter. Thank you.
Mr. Kearns, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Morgan and members of the committee. For the record, Grattan Kearns, Director of Government Relations in the Oregon University System. Happy to answer any questions on the matter. I can give you a brief review.
Senator Gordy, would you like to rephrase your question?
Thank you very much, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
My concern is on page 7 of the dash 20 amendments, lines 3 and 4, and the language which reads, the board may also establish exemptions from the competitive procedures when appropriate. Could you provide an example, please, of when it might be appropriate to seek such an exemption so that we might have a better understanding of the meaning of these words?
Thank you. Happy to. When the legislature passed Senate Bill 271 in 1995, it granted that authority to provide its own purchasing, contracting, and procurement authority, and within that it was granted the ability to provide for exemptions for that. In November of 1995, the board adopted administrative rules saying how that would occur and also internal management directives, IMDs, to show the campuses how that would occur. And we've run forward over the last 8 years with that authority. There was a case which arose in Eugene, the University of Oregon, where the competitive bidding process was exemption process was challenged. The challenge was unsuccessful, but upon reflection, the general counsel for the university system said we should put in statute what language that says you can do what 271 granted when it allowed us to have set up our own purchasing, contracting, and procurement processes. The kinds of things which are permitted under the Oregon administrative rule include such things as are listed on the second page there, in addition to emergency situations where you must go out and make a procurement because of a act of God or some other failure you have to repair. There are some routine things which are exempted under the rule, and they include a lot of things that are generally found to be exceptions, where we have federal grants or contracts where a lot of the contracts will specify what will be purchased, what the vendor will be, the kind and quality of that in furtherance of a grant. You don't go put out to competitive bid that thing. You purchase it in furtherance of the contract. Where it's library materials, where it's copyrighted materials, where it's software that you want for interlibrary use, those kinds of things, where it's material that is not subject to competitive bid, especially copyrighted. Then there are exotic things, and I put one in, cadaveric organs, where there's not much of a, we do buy them, but there's not much of a competitive market for those. We also allow for exemptions for such things as the consumable commodities, which Senator Messerly indicated, gasoline, diesel, fuel, primarily because those are purchased on the open market on a use basis. We have no fuel storage, particularly outside of the, for motor vehicles outside of the OSU motor pool, and the rest is on based on regional market price, so whatever the price is when you go to buy. Also excluded are such things that are not subject to bid, such as fees and memberships and dues and those sorts of things. You can go online and you can find the OARs and our website and the IMDs and go through that list, and it is a fairly straightforward list of things. But more importantly, it is the rule which permits that to happen and the audit power which the system reserves to go back and make sure that that rule was used appropriately.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you for that explanation. Just to probe a bit further, my concern is also around unintended consequences of the exemption language. And could you provide assurances that there's nothing in the language that would diminish opportunities for women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses to bid or actively participate in the competitive bidding processes?
Madam Chair and Senator Cordley, absolutely. That is a high-value goal of the system in its purchasing and contracting activity. It is incorporated in our mission statement. It is incorporated in our rules and remains a high objective. And I would say that for the bulk of our business, in all categories, the competitive process is followed. And for those areas where it is not, those exemptions are subject to review at the system level. especially from any potential bidder who feels that some harm may have come to them by virtue of that exception. So it is self-policing, and we are extremely sensitive to it. But in terms of your question, absolutely.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate very much that we have the opportunity to put those assurances on the record. Thank you.
Mr. Bender, could you also discuss the independent study that will be done and how that relates to this issue?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Section 28 of the bill, which is on page 30 of the amendments, will require the Oregon Department of Administrative Services and higher ed to jointly establish a independently completed report on the impacts of this act to the 2007 Legislative Assembly. So under this bill, you would receive a report, or the legislature would receive a report back in 2007 on the impacts of this bill. And at that time, it would be possible for the legislature to review the types of questions that are being brought forward today.
Mr. Bender, I think that the issues that Senator Gordy raised are important issues for this body to keep an eye on. And I'm wondering if it's possible to put in whatever information is made available to the members of that committee that this was an issue that was raised and something that we're interested in having that group look at.
We will mention that in the committee report for this bill.
Thank you.
Excellent. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Mazzarri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like a little further clarification on the diesel and the gasoline as two examples. If what I heard you say, Mr. Kearns, that the reason that should be an exemption is because basically the fuel is bought through credit cards at fuel stations. But it looks to me like this is wide open, that if you're buying fuel for in bulk for a campus facility or something, that this would also not require to be exempt from having competitive bids. Could you clarify that for me, please?
Madam Chair and Senator Messley, to the best of my ability, as I understand it, it is, as you state, that these are market purchases for consumption as opposed to purchase for storage. We are not in the habit of storing much of these materials, as I understand it. Where there is a continuing fuel source, it is subject to the competitive bidding. If there's more than one bidder for, especially for heating fuel, for example, if there is, then that is available as a competitive item if that's going to be stored. But the bulk of it is to simply say when you're out with a vehicle and you're in need of use of your credit card or your debit card for purchase, then it's a matter of convenience as opposed to finding best price at all times.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I think that's another area that I would hope would be involved or be part of the report for the next
week. We'll note that. Further questions? Well, we have Mr. Kearns here at the grilling stand. Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You were just discussing item 5 here, which talks about the granting of the authority to establish appropriate exemptions from competitive procedures in purchasing. That's also a component in Section 7 of the bill, as Senator Gordley pointed out. In number 6 here on my list, this is this discusses what's going on in Section 8 of the amendments, and this is sort of a reference. There's a reference in this section which is being amended to things that are being amended in other parts of the bill, but what this does is it exempts higher ed from state laws that govern the disposition of property unless the property is encumbered by a COP, similar to what Section 6 did, but it has to be done in both places in the law. It also exempts the state's purchasing and, OUS, from the state's purchasing and planning rules for information technology and telecommunications purchasing plan.
Mr. Bender, the issue of exempting the university system from the state's purchasing and planning rules for information technology, was that discussed in the policy committee on the Senate side?
I've seen yes. I did not follow that discussion, though.
I'm wondering if we could have you come forward and talk to us about the substance of that discussion and why the university system is requesting this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Grattan Cairns again. That is the one section which was not included in Senate Bill 271 in 1995. There was agreement that all other purchasing and contracting and procurement would be moved, the statutory authority would move over to the university system from DAS. This was the one section that was withheld and maintained by DAS. During that time, the university system has been working with the state very diligently in order to perfect its processes, especially in IT planning and purchasing and use and integration of these services, to the point where our own IT plan has been used as a model for other agencies in their like activities, where DAS was opposed in 1995. They have no objection to this because they believe that we have demonstrated significant ability to manage this on our own under the statute, under our rules, and have no objection. I think Mr. McGee is here and might want to respond if you'd ask him that question.
The only point I would raise here is that there are issues I know about the technology interfaces in the level that we deal with issues between the university system and the state system. And I would hope that in those areas that there would continue to be a very high level of cooperation so that the information transfers that are necessary for us to fulfill our oversight function are able to take place seamlessly. And that as the university system evolves on this separate path revolving around information technology, that the coordination between the financial functions of both entities are held and are very important.
Madam Chair, let me say that on behalf of the university system, we would agree wholeheartedly. Three things. First, we understand your interest in having the integration of the financial and personnel systems that you were concerned with earlier. That is a high objective of the system, and we're working on that, and we'll complete that. Second, we continue to be an active partner with Information Resources Management Division and the other entities which work on these matters and are a full partner, and will continue to do so. And third, and the thing to underline here, as I did with the State Board on Friday at their meeting, is that none of the statutory authority over these matters is repealed. It is simply moved from a split responsibility to a unified responsibility with the state system. So your oversight of these statutory authorities remains intact, and we are very conscious of that and would want to make sure that what we did with this authority was in concert with your objectives.
Thank you. I appreciate having that on the public record.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. If we could invite Mr. McGee forward, I would like to hear a bit more about the issue. Again, as Mr. Cairns stated, these exemptions were not included in Senate Bill 271 in 1995. If Mr. McGee could tell us what were the objections at that time, and then also give us some assurances again on the record that there is satisfaction now with this direction.
Good question.
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. The language in Senate Bill 437 has been looked at very closely by our Information Resource Management Division. They believe, as Mr. Grattan has indicated, that we have a commitment from OUS that they will continue to participate with us fully in planning and development of systems in a way that will further the statewide mission. They don't believe that in reference to most of the purchasing issues that it is a significant change from the current practice that we have now. I'm afraid I don't know the history of 271 to be able to talk about the concerns that our staff had at that time, but I do know that we do not have those concerns now. We don't believe this is a significant change from current practice, and we are neutral on these amendments, on these changes.
Did you say neutral?
Yes, sure. Okay. Sorry,
thank you.
Further questions or comments? Mr. Bender, back to you.
In my list, number 7, this refers to what's going on in Section 9 of the amendments, which allow the OUS Board to dispose of obsolete property and assets without DAS review, again, unless the asset is encumbered by a COP. And it also allows this authority relating to the disposal of obsolete property to be delegated to individual institutions. Clarifies that funds received from the sale of these assets are continuously appropriated to the department. That last sentence is basically cleanup language, and it doesn't change where the funds are going. It just adds a continuous appropriation language.
Question, Senator Meserve.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like a little more information on this issue. I assume that presently the university system disposes of their surplus properties through the DAS surplus program, which is has quite a large market because they also sell federal programs as well as state. Does this mean that the department university system will not be utilizing that service and will be disposing of surplus on their own?
Mr. Bender, do you have that information?
I am not aware of to what extent the university system is currently participating in the DAS surplus program. So,
perhaps, Mr. Kearing, do you have any information on that?
Madam Chair, for the record, Brett and Kearns again. I'm afraid I'm out of my depth on that. Don't have a responsive answer other than to assume that we have the ability to use the surplus property sales process. I assume we do, but I can't give you the kind of detail that you might want right now. I can certainly go and find out and report to you.
Mr. Bender?
I would also refer members to page 10 of the Dash 20 amendments, which has the Section 9 language in it. If you look on lines 14 through 17 of page 10, you can see that these amendments are eliminating a requirement that DAS approve the sale of obsolete equipment, the disposal or sale of obsolete equipment. So there would not be that requirement for DAS to actually approve these disposals. The campuses could do this without that particular approval process. To the extent that this has greater changes or changes in a greater scope, I'm not.
Mr. McGee, do you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, Bill McGee from DAS, not a great deal. We had our purchasing and surplus property units look at this very closely, and again, we didn't feel this was a negative impact on state government in general, so we're neutral on that particular change. We did ask for the language at the end of Section 9, Subsection 1, exempting any assets that were encumbered by a certificate of participation, but again, we don't believe that our approval of the disposition of surplus property by the university system is critical to state government.
So. Senator Messer, do you have further clarification?
Just comment. That's what I was hoping for clarification, and it appears to me at this point that the approval of whether they can sell surplus is granted within the institution now, but they can still utilize the surplus process. So.
Mr. Kearns, is it possible for you to make a quick cell phone call and get further clarification on that, or are we not going to be able to get any more information at this point?
I can try that, Madam Chair, or have someone. I'll have someone go out and make that call if we can. And but I can say that extending on what Mr. McGee said in response to Senator Messerly, yes, we are permitted to use the surplus property sales mechanisms which are available to us through the state, and would continue to do that, including some novel things that have been going on recently through sales on eBay and other kinds of things, maximizing return on the sale of the item. I'll go and find that out in terms of how we do that, but
everyone out there who's looking for some reasonably priced chairs is eagerly awaiting your information right now.
No comment, Madam Chair. We'll get right back to you if we can.
Ms. Bender.
The next component 8 of the bill, would allow the OUS board to delegate the acquisition and management of intellectual property to individual institutions.
Questions or comments on this issue? Let's proceed to item 9.
The bulk of the amendments in terms of the actual pages that they take up are a set of sections that that amend donation accounts that were established or that have been established in law to receive donations that are matching Article 11 G bonds for capital projects within the Oregon University system. Each of these sections are amended in the same manner to the extent that they would allow interest earned in these donation accounts to be credited to the donation account themselves instead of being credited to the general fund. We do not anticipate that this will have a large impact on general fund revenues, since typically money isn't placed into these accounts until shortly before the bonds are issued anyway. This was requested by the system. This is clearly a fiscal type of issue, and LFO does not have any concerns about this.
Questions or comments? Let's proceed to item number 10 on your list.
Item number 10 takes you to section 24 in the bill. This is a cleanup language. It cleans up statutory language to clarify that the primary account, which is holding OUS's other funds, including its tuition monies, is continuously appropriated to the Department of Higher Education. So this does not affect the legislature's authority to limit expenditures of tuition monies or anything of that nature.
And my understanding, Mr. Bender, and please correct me if I'm not understanding this, but this doesn't really change what's going on. It just clarifies
exactly
what is going on.
Exactly.
Questions or comments from the committee? Let's proceed to item 11.
Item 11 is a similar cleanup. It deals with a different account that higher ed holds, which is known as the Higher Education Student Activities Fund. This clarifies that that fund is also continuously appropriated to the Department of Higher Education. This does not affect the legislature's ability either to limit expenditures from this account. Typically, you do not limit expenditures from this account because this account receives the monies from the auxiliary activities, which are non-limited in the operating budget bill. But I do just want to indicate that these amendments merely clarify the language and do not have any impact on limitation or non-limitation.
So, and again, Mr. Bender, just to get on the record, that this does not change the process. It just clarifies it.
That is correct.
Questions or comments on this issue? Let's proceed to item number 12.
Okay. Item number 12 would allow the campuses and the system to maintain confidentiality of certain information about donors or potential donors to the system by exempting some personal information under the public records laws unless the donor authorizes the disclosure of that information. This would create for the Oregon University system the same exemption from public records laws that OHSU has in this particular area.
Questions or comments on this issue?
And so, Madam Chair, just for clarification, Mr. Bender, what specific exemptions are we talking about in 26, Section 26?
Those would be found on page 25 of your amendments. If you look at the added language on lines 14 through 18, the types of information that could be exempt from public records law includes information, the name of the person and the person's potential interest in donating money or property to the system, and information about the actual donation amount. So the campuses would not have to disclose, and the system would not have to disclose who is donating to the institution and what amounts they are donating.
Madam Chair, if we could hear why this requirement is important and necessary. I understand that, there's the desire to put this in alignment with OHSU, or that's a piece of it, but what else is going on here?
Madam Chair, Greg and Karens again for the record. Senator Gordley, these are documents prepared by, say, the president or the vice president for development in the identification of and the potential donors, the records about them, which can be personal in nature. As that development process moves forward and a major donor makes a commitment that they will make a donation, there are financial records involving that donation, which would be personal in nature, that would be especially if a gift is going to be structured in regard to estate planning or those kinds of things, the sort of things that a person would not want to normally have on a public record. Second, there's also the very typical issue of the wish for anonymity. The simple fact that the donor may not wish to be the subject of the development activity of a host of other potential beneficiaries, especially when there is a large gift made, so they may make that donation anonymously and not have to be subject to a lifetime of prospecting by other potential beneficiaries.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up. Thank you. Is it usually the case, Mr. Karens, that a donor or donors ask for that kind of anonymity?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I can't give you percentages of the donations, but there are very often the request that a donation, that the donor remain anonymous and make that a true charitable gift and pass by any reputational or other kinds of benefit that might come from that gift.
Another follow-up, Madam Chair. Is there a downside, in your view, in terms of the public's right to know what monies are being donated and where they're coming from?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I can't say that there isn't a time where there might be some concern. I have a hard time trying to hypothecate one. A person can have that cloak by dealing directly with a foundation, for example, and maintaining that anonymity, but if they are working with both the foundation and the president or the vice president for development, then records which would be exempt by the foundation can be generated and become public records on behalf of the university as a state agency. And it's to provide a parallel exemption there, as OHSU has found their benefit in the last 2 years. So if there is a downside, I have a hard time figuring. I can't give you an example of what that would be.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to clarify, at least from Mr. Karen's perspective, non-disclosure certainly serves the donor's needs, but in terms of the public's need or right to know, I'm not sure that the public interest is as well served by this language. I understand the intent. I'm just raising the question.
Senator Gordley, it would, I think, be appropriate to have this added to the list of things that we wish to have considered in the review process.
Good. Good.
Further questions or comments? Mr. Bender, let's proceed.
Yes, thank you. Our next item on the list is item number it's item number 13. This is another section of the bill that, along with Section 7, is being amended relating to the state's purchasing and planning rules and how they relate to OUS for information technology and telecommunications. You did have a discussion of this earlier. It just shows up, and it has to show up in two different places in the bill.
Comments or questions on this? Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. On page 27, lines 2 through 5, the language being eliminated includes the phrase, Board of Higher Education shall be responsible for the fair and competitive procurement of information technology, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me again why that language is being eliminated.
The reason why this language is being eliminated is Section 8 of this bill takes higher ed entirely out of ORS 291038.
Okay.
So there's no point in having a reference to them.
I see.
Further questions or comments on this issue? Mr. Bender, please proceed.
Item 14 we've discussed already. That refers to the report that DAS and OUS will present to the legislature in 2007. The law does require, or would require, that that law be independently completed. So they would essentially look to an outside source to help in completing that particular report.
Questions or comments on this part? Mr. Bender, please proceed.
Item 15, which is Section 29 of the bill, starting at the last line on page 30 of the amendments, is something that's new that was not in the Dash 17 amendments. What this does is it requires the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to report to the legislature in 2005, so next session, on the impact of a change to the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program that would restrict award amounts for students at independent colleges to no more than the amount awarded to students attending state institutions of higher education in OUS. It's often referred to, people sometimes shorthand talk of it as a flat grant amount, but this would have the award amounts to the private college students at no higher than the amounts to the OUS students. This report shall include recommendations of the commission on how best to implement the change if the legislature in 2005 chooses to make that change.
The committee, I have had concern expressed about this section that it mandates the change to take place, and I would like to have on the record that what we're asking for here is a study of the situation and recommendations on implementing the change if the change is desired by the next legislative session. And the intent here is to simply have a forum be put in place where all of the issues and all of the stakeholders can come together and analyze the situation and then present findings to the next legislative session. Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I would support that recommendation very much because as the language on page 31, lines 1 through 7, I would object to.
What was that again?
Well, I mean, if we're asking, if this, I support what you want to do. However, I do not support making the grant awards to independent colleges the same as public universities.
Oh, okay, okay. And the intention is, I think, to have a body of information that presents the whole issue to the next legislative session for consideration. Senator Gordley.
Yeah, I'm puzzling over your statement. It seems that the mandate is still here, though.
Yeah, that's what. See, that's what I was saying. I'm sorry, I'm out of order.
And that's fine. We can talk to each other.
Yeah, that was my, because I, in my original statement, I said that I objected to lines 1 through 7 because it does seem like a mandate. So does that mean we're going to take this language out?
Could you be clearer?
Okay, page 31.
About what it is that is that you think makes it a mandate
yes.
to change to a flat grant program?
Can I read it? Okay, on line 3 it says, program that would restrict award amounts for students at independent colleges to no more than the amount awarded to students attending state institutions of higher education. That, Senator Gordley, is that where you're going?
Yeah, I mean, the language still presents that this is a study about a process that will be implemented.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesrin.
I think the confusion is that it says that the way it reads is that they will report on the impacts of this happening, and we're really talking about a study on the impacts of this.
We're talking about a study.
Right. But the language doesn't say a study.
But, okay, it doesn't say a study, but to me,
this says shall report
on the impact of the change.
On the change. Are we telling the Student Scholarship Commission that they can only award the same amount to students at independents as it is to publics? Because to me, that's what it's telling me.
So if we were to say something like to report on the impact of a proposal to change?
Well,
Cindy, help us out here.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's office. Maybe I can clarify some. There's currently a statute out there that directs that when awarding financial aid for the opportunity grant, it's based on financial need. And so it would take a change of that statute, actually, to make it so that the amount of aid for independent colleges, you know, is no more than for public colleges. And obviously a change in the statute would require a bill that the next legislature would have to adopt.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. But hasn't the practice been, and somebody help me with this, that the awards for students at independents is not the same as awards for students at publics?
Representative Smith, Chair Morgan, that's correct.
Okay. Now, would this language make it the same?
No, it wouldn't. What this language does is directs the commission to conduct a study on the issue and then make recommendations to the legislature on how to implement such a change. However, for them to actually do the change, it takes another act by the legislature to amend a statute.
Okay.
Follow up?
Thank you. So, to continue, would this have any impact then on the actual awards made in the 03-05 biennium to privates versus publics?
Representative Smith, I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
Because then the first time that it would impact would be if the 2005 Legislative Assembly adopted a change, potentially the first time would be the 05-06 academic year. And that would be pretty fast, actually, if they did it.
Okay.
Most likely it would be 06-07.
Okay. So just to clarify for myself, Cindy, to actually change the way that the grants mm-hmm. are distributed from the current process would require statutory change, which would have to take place, mm-hmm. given hopefully that we're getting out of here, in the next legislative session.
Chair Morgan, that's correct. Yeah. Hopefully, yes, if you are out of here by then. Yes.
Senator Gordley, did you have clarification?
Madam Chair, I think for me, and I think this is what you were attempting to say initially, the language would be clearer if the language could be explicit about study. So that in Section 29, line 30, if we're saying the Oregon Student Assistance Commission shall prepare a study and report,
oh, okay.
That would take care of it for me.
Would me too. Thank you for allowing me, Senator Gordley, to interject with my questions.
I would be very willing to make that conceptual amendment. Let's get some guidance from our able legislative council here on how to accomplish that without getting ourselves into some place where we have to be rescued by them.
Chair Morgan, you could change the sentence to read, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission shall study and report to, and and then the last sentence of the paragraph could also be changed to read, the report shall include the recommendations of the commission on whether to implement the change and on how to best implement the change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, on whether to implement the change and how to, what was the rest of it?
Best implement, that's the language that's there now.
Just add.
And how to best
implement the change.
Implement.
So then I think it's more of a question.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, I would just ask if anyone out there has any grief over what we're doing. Okay. Thank you.
Senator Mezzoli, does this meet with your approval?
Sure.
Okay. Let us keep that one on the cooker. And we have still got a couple of things to go over here.
Okay. Section 30 is deleting four sections of statute. Each of these sections establish a donation account for an OUS capital construction mm-hmm. project that's no longer needed because the project has been completed. So this is just cleaning up your statutes here.
Questions on this? Section. Let's proceed to Section 17, which is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, the final is an emergency clause. The bill would become effective on passage.
Questions about the emergency clause? The committee members, I would like to move this bill today, which would involve conceptually amending the amendment and then moving the amendment into the bill. And with that end in sight, I would accept a motion to conceptually amend Section 29 of the Dash 20 amendments to read, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission shall study and report to the to the 73rd Legislative Assembly, and that would be lines 30 on page 30 and line 1 on page 31. And then on line 7 of the amendment, do a conceptual amendment that says commission on whether to implement the change and how to best implement the change.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. I would now accept a motion to move the Dash 20 amendments as conceptually amended into Senate Bill 437.
So moved.
Senator Gordley has moved. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. And I would accept a motion to move Senate Bill 437 as amended and conceptually amended to the full Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Senator Gordy, would you be so kind as to carry this on the Senate floor?
Okay.
And I will carry it in full and on the House floor. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 437. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 800. Mr. Bender, when you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Senate Bill 800 is a bill that you had a public hearing on the 16th of this month, concurrently with House Bill 3603. Both bills were identical in their wording. Senate Bill 800 is now before you, and there are a set of proposed amendments which have been distributed to you, and those amendments are the 800-A2 amendments. So you should have those amendments before you, as well as a very short one-page description of Senate Bill 800A, what's in the bill as it comes to you, and what the proposed amendments would do. And just as a very brief review, this is the bill that establishes the Oregon Nursing Shortage Coalition Committee to address the state's nursing shortage and distribute grant funds to nursing programs. The proposed amendments in the A2 accomplish two things. They approve the general fund appropriation, and they clarify in language the establishment of a new fund to account for the committee's grant funds. So when the committee is receiving funds for this grant program, Section 3A in the amendments establish an Oregon Nursing Grant Fund and allows that the monies that are received by either DAS or OHSU for this program will be deposited into that fund, and that those are continuously appropriated to the department for allocation to OHSU, which will then distribute the funds to the various grant recipients. There were a number of questions that had come up either at the public hearing or afterwards with people having some concerns about the funding mechanism working. This, I think, helps to clarify how the funds would work. There was a question that Representative Mona Sanderson had about whether this would require someone to come forward and request permission from the legislature each time a grant is applied for or received for this nursing program, and that would not be the case. So this would also not put a limitation on the amount of on the distribution of grant funds. Once they were received, they could be distributed to for this particular program.
Any questions on that portion of the proposed amendments? Let's go ahead then and talk about the additions to the selection criteria.
Yes. The other item in the proposed amendments, which start on page 1 of the proposed amendments, line 19, and continue for the rest of that amendment, is to require that on this coalition committee, the Oregon State Board of Nursing, which appoints a number of members to this committee, has to assure some type of geographic representation on the committee by appointing at least one member from rural Western Oregon, at least one member from coastal Oregon, at least one member from Eastern Oregon, and at least one member from urban areas. These are minimal requirements. These are not maximums, but this would assure that at all times the membership of the coalition, unless there were vacancies, but assuming the committee was fully positions were filled, would have at least one member from each of these four areas.
Members, at this time, I've asked Mr. DeLashman and Ms. Hunt to come forward because there has been a request for a conceptual amendment on the part of the coalition that has been putting the language of this bill together, and I'd like you to talk to us about what you would like to see in here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian DeLashman, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. When we did receive the amendments this morning, it appeared that there was I don't know that it was an oversight, but I think some confusion as to that the only appointing body in this process was the Board of Nursing, and actually the way that the legislation set up, the Board of Nursing appoints members under certain circumstances. OHSU appoints their members, and the community colleges actually, let's see, it's the commissioner for services for the community colleges appoints their members. So what we would like to do is make sure that all three of those entities, when appointing members, are involved in the geographic representation piece. And I think we've come up with some language working with legislative council in the hallway that we would hope you would adopt conceptually that accomplishes that.
Ms. Hunt?
Hey. Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's office. So starting on line 20 on page 1 of the A2 amendments, the new language would read from the beginning, it would read, so subsection 3, when appointing members to the committee, comma, the Oregon State Board of Nursing, the Commissioner for Community College Services, and the Oregon Health and Science University shall ensure that there is representation from each of the following areas of the state, colon, and then it goes through the four areas.
Can we... Questions or comments on the proposed language? Do you want to repeat about...
Yes, slowly so I can write.
Ms. Hunt.
Okay,
slowly
so
and loudly,
after, actually starting on line 21, so after nursing, there would be inserted a comma, and then it would say Commissioner for Community College Services, mm-hmm. and the Oregon Health and Science University, and then the shall remains, and then you would delete appoint at least one member to represent. And what's inserted in its place is ensure that there is representation from.
Madam Chair, Senator, I would ask that we retain the at least one member language in there.
Madam Chair, the reason I took that out is because each the Board of Nursing appoints six members, so they certainly can appoint at least one. But OHSU only appoints one, and the commissioner only appoints two. So combined, they can appoint, you know, one from each of them, but like OHSU cannot appoint one from each of the four areas. So unless we said...
I would prefer some kind of language that makes it clear that on the total makeup of the board, that we request that the geographic representation have at least one member from each of those areas.
Mm-hmm. So let's see, shall ensure that there
Senator Mesley, did you have something to add here before we go on another drafting spree?
Maybe I'm confused, Madam Chair, but it looks to me like we're setting up conflict, because who would have precedence over, since there's only three positions, two from OHSU and one from community colleges, I could see who's going to make that determination as to whether who has to pick one from the coast or from Eastern Oregon as examples. If the Board of Nursing has already filled their slots, and how do you resolve this issue if they've only got such few positions to fill?
And Senator Gordley, your thoughts?
What happened to Southern Oregon?
I know what happened to Southern Oregon. In the discussions that we had, we thought that rural Western Oregon would cover Southern Oregon.
Madam Chair, that is correct. When the legislators met with us, we were trying to designate areas, and we did the same thing. Actually, the legislators did the same thing with Eastern Oregon. There was a discussion about Eastern / Central Oregon, and if they're the same too, and they decided to make just those four designations rather than six designations. But I think the intent, Eastern Oregon includes Central Oregon, and the rural Western Oregon includes Western Oregon all the way down to the California border.
As long as everyone has that understanding, I would be satisfied.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, this kind of format is based upon the working relationship the Oregon Nurse Leadership Council currently has, which is everybody's members, everybody gets a voice, and it was very much intended to be all-inclusive, mm-hmm. and we didn't intend by listing these to exclude, somebody from Roseburg. We were trying to think of the broadest definitions to include them, and they are, in fact, included.
Great. That comment and on the record satisfies me. Thank you.
Ms. Hunt, do you have any suggestions to get us out of the woods here?
Yeah. So after the shall, I think what it would read is, shall ensure that there is at least one member from each of the following areas of the state.
And actually, Madam Chair, that's the language that I had written down myself, too. Mm-hmm. I think
at least one member from... So reading the whole sentence again, it would read, when appointing members to the committee, the Oregon State Board of Nursing, the Commissioner for Community College Services, and the Oregon Health and Science University shall ensure that there is at least one member from each of the following areas of the state.
Okay. Senator?
Well, Madam Chair, I raise the same question. How do you? I see no mechanism to resolve conflict. As an example, if the Board of Nursing had filled all of their positions, and the only positions left to fill were the OHSU or the Community College Association, they would pretty well be locked in where they had to appoint from which institution.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, I don't know if we're dealing with a technical drafting here or a policy question. I think in our discussions with the legislators, it was very clear that some of the organizations that are going to be submitting names to the Board of Nursing for appointment are going to have more flexibility geographic than others. And so what the working, and hopefully on the record this solves the problem, the working arrangement was going to be that they were all going to consult with each other, and there would be every attempt that if, let's say, OHSU, which does have campuses in the rural areas, but they decide to pick somebody from the urban area, that in fact the community colleges have some rural representation. The Board of Nursing may request from ONA that they submit a rural person because that's a place where there's a gap. So I think there was an expectation that these three bodies will work in kind of harmony and request from the participants that are putting the names forward the representation from the different geographic areas.
Senator Messerly, if I could add to that, also in the bill we have our staggered term language. So, for example, the Oregon State Board of Nursing slots, they have two each year, each of 3 years. So in each year, they would also have the burden of meeting this language. So it wouldn't just be OHSU or community colleges in 1 year.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendments? I really appreciate the work that the group that has pushed this bill through has done on all of the issues that have been raised. I think that this is another example of how the process is supposed to work around here, and I very much appreciate the collaborativeness of the working group.
Madam Chair, if I may, I too want to thank all the groups in the legislature. This is an example, I think, of where the legislature in many cases says, the experts in an area need to go away, figure out how to solve a problem. And for 2 years, the nurses in the state have been working collaboratively to try and figure out a solution to where we're at and bring that forward. And with your help, I think this is a good step.
Thank you. Any further issues that anyone wants to raise relating to the dash A2s or the conceptual amendment to the dash A2s? I would accept a motion then to conceptually amend the dash A2s to Senate Bill 100 so that Section 3 on line 20 reads, and please correct me, Ms. Hunt, if I get off track here, when appointing members to the committee, the Oregon State Board of Nursing, the Commissioner for Community College Services, and the Oregon Health and Science University shall ensure that there is at least one member from each of the following areas: rural Western Oregon, coastal Oregon, eastern Oregon, and the urban areas.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. The motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to move the A2s as conceptually amended into Senate Bill 800.
So moved.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Chair would accept a motion to move Senate Bill 800 as amended and conceptually amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Smith made the motion. Discussion on the motion. Objection to the motion. Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Smith, would you consent to carry this on the floor and in the full?
I would be more than happy.
And Senator Gordley, may I again prevail upon you on the Senate floor?
Yes.
Thank you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 800. And Mr. Bender, do you have any announcements for the committee?
We have no announcements. We may be scheduling OHSU Budget Bill, House Bill 5042 for tomorrow. We will be in contact with your offices about the schedule.
Thank you. And having no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned and will reconvene at the call of the chair.
Thank you.